Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of the Italian-American moment. I am your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com. Please like us and follow us on all the various social medias. My guest today, my very patient guest today, is Mariana Gatto, who is the executive director and co-founder of the very impressive Italian-American Museum of Los Angeles. I am LA. I love that. Mariana, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. I'm sorry we had some technical difficulties, but we
part of life.
Yes, yes. And we're good now. So before we talk about the wonderful museum, tell me where the family's from in Italy, please.
Primarily, my family's from Sicily and Calabria. In Sicily, I know we're very specific as Italian Americans, you know, God forbid that our villages are more than, you know, God forbid that we're not from the exact same village or that the village is more than a kilometer apart. But we're from a little town by the name of Luca Sicola, which is between Palermo and Agrigento. It's the province of Agrigento. And then in Calabria, it's a little town called Lago, which is the province of Cosenza.
Oh, okay. And have you been to this Lago?
I have, yes, a few times.
Okay, no, my wife is from a small town in the province of Cosenza as well.
Oh, really? Which one?
She is from Rovella, and it's the Comune of Zumpano. She's like, 10, 15 minutes from La Sila.
Oh, interesting.
And then we go to the beach in Paola, which is about 30 minutes from her town.
Not far. Lago, if you know where Amantea is, which is not far, super far from Paola in terms of like the coast. It's about, 15 minutes into the mountains.
Oh, okay. No, wonderful place. Yeah, she's from this little town up in the mountains. She was actually born there. And they still have a house there. So it's just, like every town in Italy, I always say it. When do you not say, oh my God, it's beautiful? I've never heard a description of a town, a city in Italy, where even the ones that are abandoned and run down, there's this beauty, this innate beauty about it. It's just undeniable. But we all know that Italy's beautiful.
The Italians, the Italians really appreciate the idea of beauty for beauty's sake.
Really,
if you're
going to
make something, make it beautiful.
They really do. And whatever, whoever or whatever God created that country and those streets and mountains and the seas, it just really was in a good mood that day. Cause
I couldn't agree with you more.
it really shows. Well, that's great. So the Italian American Museum. Now, have you been involved in this type of stuff like your whole life, or are you kind of new to this? Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, it's, let's see, 2025 will be 20 years for me, 20 years that I've been with the museum and, from working on its creation to now, doing what we do having become one of the nation's premier Italian-American museums. So this has really been my baby in a nutshell. I started working on the museum project in 2005, and I became the director of the museum in 2010. So I often describe this museum as really everything that I love and kind of a big part of who I am. Obviously, Italian-American history, preserving our history, showcasing our history is my passion. Our story is often left out of, histories that describe the American experience. But beyond that, I'm also, my background, in addition to history, is also education. So I love the notion of sharing, of constructing bridges of understanding between different communities and generations. I started my career in education and then went to on to run city museums, City of Los Angeles museums, and then made the transition to the Italian American Museum after, you know, several years of doing that. And here I am.
Well, so take me back. First of all, you look like you're about 25. So I'm not understanding.
I have a 29-year-old.
You have a what?
I have a 29-year-old.
No, you don't.
I do. Oh my son, Damiano, the love of my life.
You're telling me all these years and I'm looking at you like, okay, she looks like she's 25. So I don't get how she's.
Oh, God bless.
Years,
so that's like you're
this child prodigy in the museum world. But take me back to 2005. So I'm from Chicago. I know nothing about this. Was there an Italian American museum in 2004?
No, there wasn't. So basically, in a nutshell, the Italian American Museum of Los Angeles, and we're, you know, that's our full name, not to be confused with, you know, the Italian American Museum of Cleveland or the Italian American Museum of New York. But the IMLA is located in a building called the Italian Hall, which was constructed in 1908 to serve as a community gathering place. And the Italian Americans of Los Angeles used the building. It was a headquarters for many organizations. It was where you got married back in the day. They used it until the 1950s when the state of California purchased the building and many others in the area. This was the time when a lot of historic LA was being demolished. And fast forward many years later, the building was pretty much vacant for decades, the upper floors anyway. And it was in the late 1980s that the members of the Italian American community of Los Angeles said, you know, we have a tremendous history in this building and it's worth preserving. And so there were those who started, you know, to, you know, fundraise and to work all the political avenues to try to, you know, take over this space and develop. At that time, it was going to be like a cultural center. And the project hit a lot of roadblocks. I should mention that the city of Los Angeles owns the building and, you know, sometimes working with government agencies can be a little bit challenging. But in 2005, I went to, work full-time for the city. And one of my projects was to, kind of help the foundation that at that time was really still trying to get this project off the ground. And yeah, again, fast forward after, you know, lots of lobbying and fundraising, we opened our doors in 2016 as the museum we are today. And it's been, you know, my great pleasure to kind of lead this project and ensure that it reaches fruition.
Well, that's just wonderful. How big's the building? Curiosity.
Well, the entire building is quite large, but the museum space itself is about 7,000 square feet.
And it's multiple levels?
Yeah, so the entrance is on the ground floor, and then it's really when you get to the second story that you know, the majority of our exhibitions and the, you know, the real main attractions begin, if you will.
And it's strictly used as a museum. It's not a cultural center, so to speak, where people.
Well, I mean, we do so. Yes, every you know, on a daily basis, our doors are open. We're open 6 days a week. So 6 days a week, we're operating as a museum. But within that, you know, we also do a variety of like educational programs, tours, workshops. So there are, you know, many of our programs also take place at the museum, whether it's a film screening or a concert, or, you know, on Friday night, we had an exhibition opening with live music and hors d'oeuvres and all that good stuff. But I would say, you know, most of the time we are a museum that's open to the public. Our doors are open to the public free of charge. I think one of the things that's really unique about us is that upwards of about 80% of our visitors, maybe even more, are not of Italian extraction. They don't have Italian heritage. So what gives me a lot of pleasure is seeing how other people of all generations interact with our history, with our content, and learn something, take something away. I don't know about you, but I feel in this day and age, what's really lacking from our society is meaningful dialogue, learning opportunities, ways to kind of figure out, hey, we might look different, we might come from different backgrounds, but chances are we share a lot more than we, you know, than what divides us.
Very true. And that's a very good point. The only thing, and I hate to be the glass is half empty, but I have to say it. Yeah, I just have to say it. It's kind of discouraging that the numbers are so high for the non-Italian to come visit it. Because the way I take it is the Italian as much isn't visiting it. And it's mm-hmm. wonderful that the non-Italians, I love it. That's I find that sometimes I believe non-Italians appreciate our culture more than the Italians.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and the reason for that, and I guess I'm more of a glass half full kind of gal, but the reason for that, just to kind of explain why those numbers are what they are, is first, you know, Los Angeles is home to the nation's fifth largest Italian American population. Most people don't realize that, and that our history in the region goes back centuries. But one of the reasons why our visitorship is so diverse and not necessarily largely Italian is because the museum is located at the birthplace of the city of Los Angeles, which is this major tourist destination. It attracts people from all over the world, all over the country. And, you know, we have, especially before the pandemic, you would see, you know, busloads of tourists from Japan coming through our doors, or Germany, or school field trips. You know, we're part of the state's curriculum for teaching local history. So we have, you know, fourth graders coming in and learning about the origins of Los Angeles. So that's one of the reasons that our, you know, our visitors are who they are.
Okay.
But now, we do get a lot of Italians as well.
No, but now I understand a little better. I was going to ask you where exactly, like what neighborhood, like what's the area it's located in? So that does make a little more sense.
We are located in downtown Los Angeles. For those of you who are familiar with the city a bit, we're right across from Union Station. And one of the other local landmarks is a place called Olvera Street, which interestingly enough, the original name of it was Wine Street. This was one of the neighborhoods, the earliest Little Italy's in Los Angeles. It was always a very diverse neighborhood. You know, if you know anything about LA history, we were founded, you know, Los Angeles as a city was founded by the Spaniards, right? As, you know, part of the way of colonizing California. You know, I don't know how much you guys learned this in the Midwest or on the East Coast, but, you know, there was missions, presidios, and pueblos. And pueblos were the civilian towns. And so Los Angeles began as a civilian town that served the missions and the presidios or the forts for the Spanish crown. And early on, as early as 1827, Italians began settling in Los Angeles. And one of their first neighborhoods was the Plaza, which is the old name for where the neighborhood where the museum is located. So you had Italians and French and Mexicans and Japanese and Chinese all kind of coming together in this really interesting little neighborhood. And that's why the Italian Hall was constructed there in the early 1900s.
I see. I don't know why I'm interested in this, but is there any kind of parking lot or no?
There. Okay. Yeah. So right across the street from the museum is a large parking lot. There's actually several in the area because in Los Angeles, you know, it's all about the car. But we're also across from one of the busiest, you know, the train station, one of our biggest transportation hubs. And where the parking lot is now located was once this beautiful building that was home to the Italian consulate at one time, as well as one of LA's earliest Italian delis. But of course, you know, like a lot of the city, unfortunately, it was demolished in the 1950s to build a parking lot when the car became more and more king in Los Angeles. You saw so many of our historic neighborhoods and buildings that were just decimated by either the construction of freeways or parking lots, things like that.
Is this a multi-level parking lot?
No, it's just one story.
Okay. It's enough for...
plenty of parking. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do big events. For instance, in the fall, we do our big food and wine event called Taste of Italy. It attracts about 2,500 people to downtown LA. And of course, since there's lots of Italian wine being consumed, we encourage people to take, you know, alternative modes of transportation besides driving themselves. But, you know, there's lots of parking in the area.
Well, that's very good. That's important. I mean, it's just a reality of it all. So how does, if it's free to get in, how is the museum sustain itself?
Okay, so for a few ways, I mean, number one, you probably, I know we follow each other on social media, so you can see I'm always fundraising. I'm all over the place. We write grants. We depend on everything from small, you know, micro donations, such as individual memberships, to legacy giving. People include us in their estates. People, both individuals, foundations, corporations, make contributions annually. Of course, there's fundraising events, like I mentioned, our Taste of Italy in September. We also do a celebrity golf tournament in June. So lots of different ways, but this might be a little bit too much information, but for those of your listeners who are, you know, maybe trying to do similar things in their communities or who are in the nonprofit world, they'll also tell you that sometimes by being an admission-free institution, you can actually attract and access more funding through, say, government organizations or specific types of grants. So you actually, in some ways, like, do better than by charging. Unless you're, of course, like one of the really, really big guys where it's like, you know, they've got, you know, 5 million people coming through their doors annually and they can say, you know, give me $20, $35, whatever it may be per person. We also take a lot of pride in just being an institution that can be accessed by all. You know, a lot of the school age visitors who come to the museum attend Title I schools. You know, they're on the free or reduced lunch program. This is one of their only museum experiences. Many of the programs that we offer, whether it's a concert or an opera recital or a craft workshop, they're all also free of charge. And again, it's great to see families, especially in this day and age, come to the museum, interact with our content, learn something new, and then also have one of the few experiences that they might actually have access to. These are the people who need it the most often. So that it also gives me a lot of just pride to see that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And that you're spreading our culture, our history, which is doubly wonderful. So yeah. Are any of the, and I'm not familiar with LA or the, you know, Italian community, but is any of the organizations in the Italian community, like, do they, I don't know, like work with you, you know, back you a little, try to do things there? Cause it sounds like you can do events, like you have all the capabilities of doing major events there. Do they do that? Are they helpful?
We do. We have a lot of fantastic partners, whether it's the Italian government. We have obviously a very close relationship with our Consul General and the entire Sistema Italiana. They have been our partners for many years. We also work with national Italian organizations like the National Italian American Foundation, like the Sons of Italy, like the Italian Sons and Daughters of America, you know, in a variety of capacities. You know, I'm very honored to work closely with these folks and sometimes, you know, serve on their boards. The Italian American Future Leaders Conference comes to mind. I tend to be kind of global, or at least national, in my thinking. I really feel it's important for us as Italian Americans to be less myopic and think outside of our communities, figure out a way to work together, which is not very Italian, right? But for instance, and I'll
let's just speak the truth. Yes, I love it.
I'll give you just like kind of a very specific reason I say that is we at the Italian American Museum of Los Angeles, we produce 2 original temporary exhibitions each year. So in addition to our permanent exhibition, which examines the history of Italian Americans in the United States, we also do 2 temporary exhibitions each year. And these are all over the map. Our last temporary exhibition examined Pinocchio, which hopefully many of your listeners know, has been translated into more languages than any of the book besides the Bible.
Well, I hope they do, because I did an Italian American moment about Pinocchio and the author and the story.
Okay, so well, yeah.
I hope they do. Sure I condensed it into 40 seconds, though. I talked
about it. Okay. So that exhibition was incredibly popular, visitors of all ages. On Friday, this last Friday, we opened a new exhibition about Louis Prima.
Louis Prima, yes. So Louis what would Prima. I find yeah. if I come to this exhibition about Louis Prima? What would I see there?
You'll see everything from The first Grammy Award that was ever awarded to Louis Prima and Keeley Smith for the song Old Black Magic, and the first Grammy in that category, I should say. You know, Louis Prima also wrote Sing, 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 which Benny Goodman, of course, experienced a huge hit with, but he was the songwriter. So you'll see the original, music for Sing, Sing, Sing. One of the things that I find fascinating about Louis Prima is that, you know, he was really one of the first Italian-American entertainers who said, no, my name isn't Lou Prime. My name is Louis Prima. And even though it's World War II and Italians are kind of somewhat considered the enemy and speaking Italian is frowned upon, I'm still singing in Italian. And not only am I singing in Italian, but I'm experiencing hits with these songs. So he really paved the path for other entertainers, including Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. And so you'll see all the fascinating parts of his life. You'll see some of his wardrobe, personal effects. You'll see images of him with just everybody under the sun, from Elvis to Sinatra. You'll see his gold records. But the reason I brought up these exhibitions is because, you know, we create these two original exhibitions each year. And after they leave or after they close at our venue, oftentimes they're put into storage. Or the items that we, you know, receive loans for are sent back to the lenders. My vision as what I hope for Italian-American institutions, other Italian-American museums and cultural centers is that we can share these. Like, there's no reason that this exhibition can't now travel to New York or to New Orleans or to Chicago or to Florida, wherever. And maybe, you know, we're actually in conversation with a library that would like one of our last exhibitions that examined Italian American women's stories told through needlework. So we're not necessarily, we don't only work with Italian American organizations. Like, why not share our history with the masses again? And yeah, so I can.
How long is a typical exhibition at your museum?
We do 9-month runs.
Oh, it's 9 months there?
9 months. Yeah. I mean, if you like, I'll be honest with you, we're small compared to other museums that have huge staffs. You know, again, my background is in history and education. I'm our primary, you know, fundraiser, grant writer, that sort of thing. And I also write our exhibitions and curate them. So it's a lot. Like, so if you can imagine, by the time 9 months is over, I mean, we're barely, you know, exhaling and we're already, you know, we've already putting the everything in motion for the next exhibition, which we've been working on for 2 years. Our exhibitions are usually 2 years in the planning and in the design. And, you know, so for us to do an exhibition that would be 3 months, it would be just absurd, you know, unless we want to bring in a lot larger budget, much more staff. But also, I'll be honest with you, in a town like Los Angeles, where there's so much going on and you're competing against these much larger organizations with enormous publicity budgets or marketing budgets. Oftentimes by the time people hear about an exhibition and they've figured out, oh, you know, I'm going to go 3 weeks from now, we want to give them enough time. So by the time, you know, they hear about it, come down. We also do a lot of programming with each exhibition. So for this, for Louis Prima, for instance, we'll be doing a few concerts. We'll be doing workshops for kids. We'll be doing a jazz masterclass. We'll be doing, you know, lots of great stuff. And that also takes time. So we found that, you know, 9-month runs are kind of, it's a good length of time for us.
Just curiosity. Yes. I know it's free to get in, but when you have a special thing, an exhibition, is there a charge or it's still free?
It's still free.
Or are you just looking like, is there like a Goodwill donation type of thing?
Yeah. I mean, of course there's a donation box. We encourage folks to, you know, to donate according to their ability. But most of what we do, is grant funded. And one of the requirements of the grant is often that you provide it free of charge. For events like Taste of Italy, which is a fundraiser, or a golf tournament for you know, that matter, of course, there's a fee to participate. But most of what we do, educational program-wise, the museum also publishes 2 curricula each year. These are basically lesson plans, curricula that teachers can take and, you know, print it out or, you know, put it up on the screen and have a ready-made lesson for their students about any topic you can imagine. And that's also free. It's downloadable from our, on our website. You can access probably 95% of our collection is searchable online. Our permanent exhibition is also accessible in its entirety online. So we have folks in Japan, in Europe, all over the United States who probably would never be able to come to the museum, accessing our content. And I feel very strongly that, you know, in this day and age with the help of technology, we can really make this information, you know, open to everyone and democratic, you know, not democratic in the political sense, but just, you know,
I totally understand. Yes. Yes.
Enabling folks to learn.
That's outstanding. Real quick though, you were mentioning about the teachers and the curricula. What exactly would they be showing their students? Would it be stuff that's in your museum teaching about the history of Italian Americans?
A little bit of that. It's a little bit of everything. So you have this, I'm sure, in the state of Illinois too, that the state creates like a standards-based curricula. So there's educational content standards for the state. And we develop these different curricula based on those content, these educational content standards. So there's everything covered from lessons that a 12th grade government or civics teacher could teach their, you know, use in the classroom. We have a lesson about food and how you know, food is representative of culture. We have a curricula on Pinocchio, one on the First Amendment, one on the experiences of Italian Americans during World War II. I'm not sure how many of your listeners are familiar with, you know, there were obviously you know, the Japanese and Japanese American community really suffered the, you know, this tremendous, you know, with the internment and the other violations of civil liberties during World War II. What's spoken of less, and what was also very a big part of our experience out here on the West Coast, were of course the Italian American experience and how it impacted our identity as Italian Americans. So we have a curricula on that, you know, a little bit of everything.
Wow. Very impressive.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying very impressive, all of these things.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it just seems like, you know, I'm tired just listening to you because it sounds like you're just never stopping. So as an exhibit is there, before it's even there, you're working on the next one.
And the one after that.
Wow. Like,
well, people will come to us sometimes and say, oh, you know, I've got a friend who's an artist, or my cousin's an artist. How about, you know, giving him an exhibit? And I probably shouldn't even be talking about this. It's like, you know, first, you know, we're a museum, we're not a gallery, you know, and we don't do very many exhibits for like living artists or solo exhibitions for living artists. It's because, again, we're more of a museum. But also, you know, we are currently programmed in our temporary galleries till 2026. So we've already got, you know, the next exhibition after that. And then we're working on that next exhibition after that in the pipeline. So, yeah.
Can you let us know what the next one would be? Or is that a secret?
We're not able to announce it yet.
Wow. It really is a secret.
It is going to be very specific to the Italian American community. And it will, it's an exhibition that examines anti-Italianism.
Okay. I like the dramatic effect. I like that you can tell me. that's great. Okay. So I know you're very, like you said, you have a presence nationally now. They're building a museum in New York, a brand new one. Did you kind of, you know, they reach out to you and like, you know,
so
pick your brain, so to speak?
You know, yes and no. So the very esteemed director of the Italian American Museum in New York, Dr. Joseph Schelsa, you know, we commiserate, we share experiences, we co-chair a group, a committee for Italian American museums and cultural centers. So there's a lot of interaction, interfacing. There isn't like a formalized relationship between the two museums. But just like, you know, the Italian American Cultural Center in Iowa, or Il Circolo in Florida, or my dear friend Frank Maselli in New Orleans, who runs the American Italian Cultural Center. We're open to working with everyone. And I think, you know, that's what will enable us to
grow.
Yeah, to grow and to, you know, to be stronger as a community.
Definitely. I totally believe that. I agree with you. I have seen pictures, obviously. Your museum looks stunning. I mean, it's just beautiful. Definitely hope to see it one day. On my little website, I actually have a column guide, and I list all the museums in the United States. And I list all of the periodicals, and I list, you know, because to me, that's important. You know, I would base trips upon these types of things. That's how crazy I am. Okay.
Oh, no.
I'm going to base the trip around an Italian museum because that's important. And I think our people need to know that there's this museum in LA. There's going to be a museum in New York. You know, there's one in Louisiana. So that's all important stuff.
No, that doesn't sound strange at all. I mean, I'm the woman who, like, my dream is to just kind of get on a bus and go all around the nation, going from Italian festival to Italian festival, from Little Italy to Little Italy, to, you know, Italian religious feast to Italian religious feast. That's kind of...
Well, since you say that, I kind of feel like, in a way, you're living the dream. You're actually on a daily basis. And
you know, you're stealing my slogan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, really.
It's kind of become my, people will say, how are you doing? And my usual response is, I'm living the dream.
Well, I mean, it's work. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of paperwork. It sounds like, you know, I couldn't even imagine all that you do, but you're getting to work with Italian, what's the word I'm looking for? In the Italian world, in the Italian field.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. I mean, I'll tell you a little story. So, you know, growing up in Los Angeles, I always had this very strong attachment to my roots. You know, we were and we're not, you know, what is kind of often considered like the typical Italian American family. My dad imparted to me a tremendous appreciation of history and of where we came from. But we didn't have like the really big family and like the epic Sunday dinners. You know, I grew up in, you know, like essentially kind of the East Hollywood Hills. I wasn't sitting on a stoop, you know, it was kind of a little different, you know, than the what is often considered the so-called typical Italian American experience. But so there was less, I didn't have my grandparents as long as many. There was less of a mirror as an Italian American. You know, in Los Angeles, Italians aren't really spoken of as much as they are in other cities. We're not considered, you know, like the part of like the founding story of Los Angeles. But when I was in college, I learned about this building that called the Italian Hall, where the Italian American Museum of Los Angeles is now located. I learned that, you know, there were members of the community that were trying to resurrect it and raise money to restore it. And the first time I walked into this building that I had literally passed, you know, countless times, I just never knew what it was. I walked in and, you know, that the building was still like, you know, it was a disaster at that point. There was scaffolding preventing the roof from caving in. I said, I want this needs to be a museum and I want to be the director of it.
And that's what happened.
So yeah, it was really like, you know, my lips to God's ears moment. And, you know, there's times where I say, like, God, I mean, was I crazy? And yes. I mean, could I have done other things? Yes. Could I have made more money? Absolutely. But I'm doing what I love and what I feel passionate about. And I feel, you know, without sounding too self-important, preserving these stories and ensuring that the memories of our ancestors and their experiences were not in vain is something very, you know, deeply spiritual to me. And that's what kind of, you know, motivates me to get out of bed a lot of time. You know?
Well, so, let me say this. I can totally see the sincerity. I can see the passion. I love a good dream story, especially when they actually happen. Okay. Dreams are great, but they're even better if they actually become reality, right? So
absolutely.
God bless what you're doing. You're doing important work. You're doing work for us. And, you know, there's so few that do due to many reasons. And, you know, I didn't want to get into that, but, you know, so, you know, never think any less. Every day is a great thing. And it's just awesome what you're doing and what you've done. And I love you. Like I said, the passion, and you're driven by that. And what you do with your heart is a great thing. So,
Well, thank you for that.
I tip my hat to you and all the work.
Well, thank you. And right back at you. I mean, you know, I know this podcast is also a labor of love for you.
Definitely. I love these kind of stories. I love talking to my fellow Italian Americans and seeing what they're doing and these type of stories. And it's great. I could talk to you for another hour and a half, but
that's fine. We can keep on going. I don't know what your timeline is like. So
I was going to say, it's just, you know, in a perfect world, you're right. We would all like nationally work together. And, oh, this is what I wanted to ask or say to you. Believe me, you know, that stereotype of the common Italian American story or the, you know, family and the Sunday dinner. I actually, you know, if people ask me like, what does it be? You know, what do you feel like to be Italian? What does that mean? I always kind of frown upon that because it's like, I don't know. It's almost like family. Well, don't these other groups have families? What are we, the only people with families? And this Sunday dinner thing, the other groups don't eat dinner on Sundays. Now I get the stereotypical, the 37 people around the table. I get it. But I always say to myself, believe me, we're more than that. And if we're not more than that, we got a problem. So, I mean, that's not where you put the bar to set. I'm Italian. I'm not Italian. That to me, that's just nothing. Growing up in California, yeah, you didn't have the stoops, you didn't have the neighborhoods. One question I was going to ask out of curiosity, the area you grew up in, though, regardless of the stoop, were there other Italian Americans in the area?
So I'm going to just go back before I answer that. So we actually, at one time in Los Angeles, we had 6 Italian neighborhoods. And by the time I was born and coming up, there were little remnants, like looking back, you know how you kind of start to, I don't know, certain things, you don't really understand them as a kid, or you look back at certain things and you go, oh yeah, you know, I was aware of that then. I couldn't really make sense of it. But my family, when they came out to my father's family, the Sicilian side anyway, they entered through Louisiana, not New York. They were in Louisiana. They cut sugar for 2 seasons. Then they continued west to Colorado, where there's also a huge Italian American community in Denver and Southern Colorado. Again, not spoken of very much, but you know, steel was king, and that's what brought them out to Colorado. And then they came to Los Angeles right after World War II. And they originally settled in Lincoln Heights, which, you know, I know you have one of those in Chicago too, right? Do you have a Lincoln Heights, or is it Highland Park that I'm thinking of?
No, we don't have a Lincoln Heights. No.
Okay.
Well, an area of Chicago
Lincoln
or
Park.
Lincoln Park is an area of
Lincoln
Chicago.
Park. Okay. Yes. Well, anyway, so they settled in Lincoln Heights, which was one of the largest Italian neighborhoods until the 1950s. They were there briefly, and then they moved to Hollywood, which is more or less where I still live. And growing up, you know, there were all these kind of little remnants of Little Italy, if you will. But, you know, I would say some of my earliest memories where I knew that I was part of a culture that was different than some of my friends, and that was just different, was going to the Italian church in Los Angeles, which still exists here, St. Peter's Italian Church. There's mass every Sunday in Italian. We also do a lot of the religious, the Italian religious feasts from, we do a big St. Joseph's table. I can keep on going. But it was, you know, attending one of those St. Joseph's tables when I was like 5 or 6 years old and just like taken back by this spectacle, because really that's, if you've ever attended a St. Joseph table, if you ever participated in one, that's the only way I can describe it. It's like this feast of, for your eyes, for your, you know, for all your senses. And, so yes, there were like little pockets of Italian communities, and there were Italians, but it's not like other places. I mean, it, you know, and other places aren't like LA and other places aren't like New York or Chicago. I mean, there's so many different shades to Italian America. And I really love embracing all of them, you know, whether it's Des Moines or Mississippi, you know, the Italians of the Delta. I mean, we're all Italian Americans. And if you ask what I love is, you know, I have a second home in the place in Colorado where my family originally settled. And you talk to these like sixth generation farmers who are, you know, the descendants of Sicilians, like my family, who came and settled there in late 1800s. And you ask them what they are, and they say, we're Italian American.
That means,
you know, that means something. And Now, like, you know, this guy with the last, you know, who still has the Italian last name, it's probably completely different than what we consider like expressions of Italian American identity in Chicago or New York or wherever. But you're not going to be able to convince him that he's anything other than that.
And that's great. You know, I love pride. Yeah. I love it. I love it. So
yeah, pride, and just like also this, like, this is how we, you know, these are the foods we make. This is our experience as Colorado Italians or California Italians or whatever. And so I love that, you know, and I feel that there's room for everyone under this tent called Italian America. And the more inclusive we are, the more I think we will encourage people to continue to identify as such. Now, you know, 5, 6, 7 generations later.
I like that. The tent we call Italian America. I like that. That was good. That was really good. Well, Mariana, keep doing what you're doing. And we thank you. We have a better, honest to God, I mean this. We're fortunate to have you, and our Italian America is fortunate to have you in your museum and all the other work you do, because it's all great, positive work. So thank you so much. And thank you for, you know, this time for the interview. I really enjoy talking to you.
No, my pleasure. And, you know, and again, if your visitors would like to come see us.
Please tell us. Yes. Give us some info.
You can, our website, where you can, again, like, you can read our permanent exhibitions. You can see some of our past temporary exhibitions and all the stuff that's going at the museum is www.iamla.org. And then you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram. We're pretty active. But most of all, we hope you'll walk through our doors one of these days.
That's the goal. That's the dream. Yes. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.